and welcome to another episode of Designing Success. I'm your host, Rhiannon Lee, and today our conversation revolves around a very special guest, someone whose work with design firm Cedar & Suede many of you will be familiar with, but someone who also played an unintentional role in my own career trajectory. Allow me to introduce Carlene Duffy, an accomplished interior designer, a much-loved television personality, author of the stunning coffee table book This Old Van, and a powerhouse behind the celebrated design firm Cedar & Suede. In today's episode, we will delve into Carlene's unique journey into the world of design, her sources of inspiration, and her impactful presence on the reality TV show The Block. Let's discover how her initial steps into the industry helped shape her into the force she is today. We'll learn about her creative fuel sources and her advice for aspiring designers. We'll also indulge in a little nerdy passion of mine and Carlene's, caravan life, exploring the unique design challenges and endless possibilities that come with tiny living spaces. If you've ever wondered about what happens after you work on reality TV, this episode is for you. I'm so glad you're here to join us for this incredible chat and conversation with Carlene Duffy. The funny story I was going to tell you was really around your involvement in the creation of my own career, your unknowing involvement in that when you were on The Block, there was some sort of challenge around caravans or renovating caravans, I believe. And you had chosen the 10 top renovated caravans in Australia for just like a Nine Life online article, and our caravan featured in that. And I think it was the very first time I went, oh, maybe I do have a bit of an eye for this. You know, it was a validating experience for me, and it sort of kicked off my career. So a big thank you to you for choosing our caravan, because
That's really cool. Yeah. I actually have no, I know we did the Yam Caravan Challenge. I have no recollection of that article, which is maybe a sign of the time of my life, which was chaotic. But yeah, that's really cool.
And it's actually quite great, I think, how little sliding door moments or little things that you do, because yes, with PR, they're like daily, let's just throw another thing up, like find 10 on Pinterest right now and we'll put your name underneath. Like we know how the media cycle works and how things go, but how that little thing can mean like nothing, you know, it's just something that you've got to get done during the filming of The Block or whatnot, and then it can kickstart an entire career. And then I'm now working with emerging designers, so it just has this like flow on effect, but you're responsible for all of it. So well done.
That is, unknowingly, but that's true. Actually, I've never really thought about that, how it can be just those little things. And there's probably a lot of instances like that and examples like that where you have some sort of influence over something somebody else does without knowing it. And you're right, that's a real, it can be like an avalanche, really.
Yeah, and that unknowingness, like we just do these little things. And at the time, I don't believe there would have been that many examples of renovated caravans because, you know, as you know, they are very tough to get into and to get finished. I think a lot of people have beautiful dreams and might buy something, and then when they start looking at the intricacies of actually getting it to Pinterest level, like once it's actually finished and styled and photographed, there's not as many examples as you would imagine there are. There's a lot of selling my half-done project out there than there is actually the Pinterest images. So there you go.
There's not, and like at the time when we did our first caravan, there was next to no images available on Pinterest, which made it hard to have the confidence to like do the first one, because we really, you know, I mean, we're renovators, but we were definitely going in green, and it meant every van we did subsequently was a real learning experience. So that's sort of why we wrote the book that we wrote, because we received so many messages and emails from people needing really specific tips and advice, because renovating a van's not like renovating a house. It's not, just because you have to use specific types of materials, and there's really intricate like knowledge you need to know, like how do you replace the corner window of a Viscount. So that was sort of our impetus in writing the book. So there was a resource out there that people could utilize and essentially take the load off the emails we were fielding. So yeah, it feels good to know that's out there and it's done, and it's that it could potentially help people going forward.
For sure. There's so many customizations and intricacies in each different like brand of van as well. And I would say that ours is a 1979 Franklin Sunwagon pop top. And we would probably get 2 to 3 messages a week on that Instagram account, which I haven't posted on in more than 2 or 3 years. And just around, what did you do with the canvases? How did you get the rods to do this? What did you do with the silicone? You know, all those little questions.
Yeah.
So I can imagine with the volume, since you have more publicity behind what you've been doing, that they're just questions are coming thick and fast.
Yeah, they were. So it feels nice to know there's just a one-stop shop, very accessible. And I guess that's what we like about the caravans and the renovating of them, is that it is accessible. Like when we did our first one nearly, we decided we were done with tents. We wanted a caravan we still wanted to camp and give our kids that experience, because Michael and I both grew up camping, and you know, they form so many good childhood memories for us. So we wanted to give our kids that, but we're busy and setting up a tent and just felt like a lot more work. So it was sort of why we decided we were going to do a caravan. But my God, they were expensive and they were also incredibly boring, the new ones. So we were a bit like, well, we are renovators. Like, we can buy something, you know. We bought Millie for like $5,500 and put our own spin on it. And then we absolutely loved holidaying out of all of our vans. So it just, it was, I guess that's what it is for people. And that's the draw card. It is, it's so much more accessible and you're able to customize it and get something that you want at the end of the day.
And you love, like, we're exactly the same with the boys, and we set it all up and we get in and everything's exactly as we want it and beautiful. And you look around and yes, there might be other caravans, but they've all got the same tired upholstery and the same fit outs and layouts. And I just absolutely love the customization and stuff when we're inside and all the things have been created for the functionality of our family and what we actually need and stuff. So it's always, you close the door at night and you think, oh, ours is prettier than all.
that's what I think.
Here. It's,
yeah, I know.
And that's joyful, instead of a tent being like waiting for the rain to pass.
Wait, the rain's going to come. Like, it's inevitable. It's going to rain. Camping, it's going to rain. So it's, that was another reason. Like, I think it was our last camping trip and we packed up in the rain and we knew we'd have to get home and like set the tent up. And it's just like, that's a lot of work. If you've only got a week in which to holiday, that's like just the work either side of it as well.
Yeah, drying out the tent for a week, you know, your holiday for
like
a week.
A burden.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And also your point earlier around the accessibility, it's so true. Like, what every person has like financially ability to do, it's so much greater within the renovating a caravan space than perhaps flipping a house or buying an investment and then looking at, you know, getting in your imported tiles and all the things you want to do. Because yes, the challenges are there with lightweight things and other things, but you can get a real design happening. You can get a real sense of the color palette, a real sense of what you want to do, and you can afford to execute it all the way to the end rather than run out of money halfway through your project. So
yeah, absolutely. And there's a bit of a hole in the market, I think, for those who want a new van but want it to feel, you know, designed like you feel, I want to feel like I'm on holidays when I'm in my van. So I reckon there's a bit of a hole in the market for new vans to offer something that's a little bit, well, you know, offer colour for one. I mean, that would be a starting point.
Anything bespoke, and even just to reassess the upholstery or like the material selections and things. I think that there's been no uproar, if you will, with demand. People are still buying them, so they still think that that's what people want. But I feel like it's just a very similar, same aesthetic. And as you say, it's such a market for people who will think, I need to put my own stamp on this. And then it makes every holiday so much better, because you just love the space you're in, instead of get out of the caravan all the time to get doing things. You actually, if you do get rained in and you have to play a board game and do this or that, you're actually really enjoying where you are as well. So
yeah, totally.
Can you tell me a little bit about your own pathway into design? Like, when did you feel like interior design was calling you in terms of a career choice?
It actually started when I was on maternity leave with my second, so Stella, and I don't know if it's just being at home. We'd bought and we were living in the house that we're currently in. And we had no money to do any of the things that I wanted to do in terms of the interiors. I think it sort of prompted me to think outside the box, and I became, maybe it was like baby hormones, I don't know, but I became really invested in interiors. So I would just soak up whatever I could. I couldn't, like, I think at the time, like, I was on maternity leave, Michael was an apprentice, and I like couldn't even justify the cost of a magazine. So I just hang out every Wednesday for the Design Files house tour, and just soak up every detail. And at the time as well, Emily Henderson, her design blog was just my go-to. But again, like, she at the time, she would only post, you know, a couple of times a week. And there wasn't, I don't think, like, Pinterest wasn't, Pinterest was a thing, but Instagram wasn't. But I just found myself completely obsessed with interiors. And at that time, I did not know how I was going to, I guess, execute that, or if I was going to do anything with it. I had young children, so that I guess I wasn't really thinking too much about how I would make a career of it. And I don't think I even elaborated on that thought too much before we applied for the block, which we did after a camping holiday, interestingly, and pulled together a video at D-Day, of course. The very last second, we pulled together the application thinking we're just going to apply because, of course, we had young kids and we were like, we can't go, but we were like, well, let's just apply because we won't get, probably won't get on anyway. And then, of course, we did. And then the block did provide this platform ultimately that allowed me to be able to take, I guess, whatever sort of path I wanted with it. But I spent a lot of years after that not, I feel like we had so many balls in the air, like we were so busy with so many different things. Like, we did a lot of brand campaigns, and we were filming TV shows after that. So I didn't commit to, you know, offering design as a service really until just a few years ago, because the block for us was 9 years ago. So, which is actually insane. But yeah, there's been a lot of time in between then and now where I've, I guess, offered small samplings of like a design service, like design intensives, without offering full service interior design. So it's only, in the past few years that I've just really committed to it, got staff, and where I'm really happy with where the studio's headed.
That's amazing. And I guess, you know, there are opportunities, as you say, post the block to monetize that exposure, and perhaps not, and you still did have the little kids. So it's not like you were like, okay, well, we finished that. Now I need a full-time career. You know, it sounds like it very organically sort of unfolded for you into a place where you could feel like, okay, now we can start to take on clients and, you know, look at projects outside of the ones like your beautiful house and the things that you were already doing as well. So
And that, I think, like, sometimes I look back at those years and I think why didn't I just commit from the get-go? But I know I didn't have time. Like, I've always felt I was doing a lot of writing in the media space as well. So I was writing for realestate.com and Domain and a whole bunch of others. And I sort of fell into that too, although writing is my background. I just felt so, I was so busy doing so many different things that I also look back on those years and I think, where I sort of think, was it a missed opportunity to not focus in on something, even though I love like sort of the diversity of what I was doing. Like, I don't like routine. I love having, you know, multiple things on the go and having every day be different. Like, I really do love that. But sometimes I look back and think, yeah, I wish I had focused in on something. So it feels really good to have that now, to have the studio as my core, and then everything else around that is a bit of a bonus. That's how I think of it.
For sure. And was it a big leap of faith, if you will, or a baptism of fire? Because I know working with emerging designers, you know, they're trying to set up back-end processes and before they have clients, and thinking about imposter syndrome and how do we actually go out there and offer full service design when I don't have a portfolio of full service design behind me. I feel like you have the you know, ability to have a portfolio, if you will. People have seen your work, but did you still have reservations in that space around just starting and tomorrow you're offering full service design?
Yes. So I did, even though I did have work, you know, I did have a small portfolio. Hiring was mega because the idea of having someone on salary and then knowing you need to sustain work for them is a big deal. I would say I'm pretty good at pivoting, you know, if ever we need to. But we've been lucky in that I feel like, you know, the saying is if they build it and they will come. So I've got two staff members now, and we've had, you know, a steady flow of work. So I haven't had to worry about that, which is so far, which has been great. But yes, it's huge. It's a mega step. But also for me, because I didn't have a normal pathway to this, I sort of feel like I side-doored my way into this space. I didn't seek formal qualifications and I didn't ever work for an interior design studio. So I definitely did it the hard way. My staff do all our documentation. I have no interest in the documentation side, but I also would never have time to do it because I feel like I've got to be more of, I guess, the puppet master, and I've got to be across accounts and, you know, liaising with the bookkeeper and doing all the branding and the marketing. And I definitely wouldn't be able to have time to document now, nor do I have the interest to. And I think that's really been key for, I think it's important for you to know your strengths, but also to know your interests. So I did it in a really roundabout way in that I don't suggest this for people who want to go into this space. I really suggest you go get formal qualifications and you work for a big design firm, whether it's an architect or a big interior design practice, because I would say it's just the best way. Even if you don't, you know, you'll start doing things that you don't really want to be doing long term, but it's the obvious solution. It's the obvious way to make sure you know you're across everything. And I would almost say too, like some interior design studio don't offer the level of documentation that we do. Like we provide concept all the way through to construction documentation. Not every interior design studio does that. Some people just like want to provide, you know, concept. But we really pride ourselves on being able to deliver the full package. But I would say do get your qualifications or do formal training, I should say. Even if you don't want to ultimately at the end of the day offer everything, I would say it's just good to know in the beginning. But yes, so I feel like I make all the selections. So I'm still very much in the weeds of our projects, in that, yes, I make all the finishes, selections, lighting, colors, carpet. That still all comes down to me, and there'll come a point where I won't be able to be making all those little itty bitty selections, but that is where I, in the design aspect, am able to really pull my weight, I guess, because I do have a strong vision. I always sort of know what I want, and that's key, is having, I guess, having someone in there making confident decisions.
Yeah, hard agree. And I love that you said there, just hone in and understand what you don't love about, because design is so huge. As I said, it's very nuanced. There's so many different avenues, and I see so many people starting out and putting everything that an interior designer could possibly offer onto the website. But what lights you up? Because I'm exactly the same. I will write straight away, this is not an architectural or structural service. I'm not giving you advice on this. I don't want to do the drawings. I don't want to do certain parts of the documentation, because I'm all about this part. And I love, as you said, you know, I like making the selections. I like doing all of the interior stuff, but I do not like the drawing it all up, doing elevations, doing that stuff. Like, nothing about that lights me up. And I very early ditched it and did the same. Like, just went, nope, that's not something that I want to do. And I think it's great advice just to say, really sit down and think. And maybe you don't know what that is until you've done 3 or 4 jobs, but if there's something that you start to do, then your choice is easy. You can outsource it or remove it from the offering. Like, you just really need to make sure you're not plugged in at your desk to stuff that just doesn't excite you, because you'll resent your business really quickly.
Yeah, yeah, you will.
Doing all of that nonsense.
And I've seen a few studios, I guess, well, a few business owners do it in a partnership. And I think that's a really good idea, because there's actually been a lot of instances where I think, oh my God, I would just love to have someone in this with me.
Yeah.
And you've probably seen that too. Lots of people go into partnership together. I think that's really smart, rather than doing it the way I've done it. But having staff that can deliver on your shortcomings, I think, is really important. Like I said, we want to be able as a studio to offer, to work with architects and offer the full service. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you as the director needs to be doing it all. And to be honest, it's not feasible. Like, no. There's not enough hours in a day for you to be doing it all. So I would say I still pay myself a pretty pathetic salary in order to be able to have, you know, strong people in my team. And obviously we're scaling up and slowly, but we're building the business, and there'll come a point where, yes, I'm able to pay myself a better salary. But right now, it's important to me that I just have really strong people around me.
Yeah, and I love that. And just as you say with the partnerships, just knowing that they can lean on each other's skills, and even just not being in a studio on your own all day, every day. Like, I think about that. Yes, there are challenges when business goes sour or things can happen, but that you can do that for yourself. As I said, you can end up resenting it. You can do things just on your own that are just as risky to the bottom line and the business in general as it is with having that sounding board, someone to bounce off. I'm with you. I think I look back and think, oh, it would have been quite good. And maybe then I could have leaned on their skills in the documentation part of deliverables in my business. And then I wouldn't exclude certain things. We could actually expand on what we offer instead of just like sticking my lane with what I want to offer. So I think that's a really good consideration as you're starting a business. It's not always a negative thing to have somebody else as well, because they're going to bring so much and probably more than they take, I would imagine.
And just emotional support too.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. So you mentioned your time on the block and, you know, how that organically sort of kickstarted. And that is a way that the block has benefited your career, I guess. Is there anything about appearing on TV and TV in the design space in general that's hindered the process for you?
I will always, doesn't matter how long I do this, I will always be a block contestant in terms of the media's eye. It doesn't matter what I do.
Yeah.
From then. And I'm sort of okay with that, because it did provide me this platform on which I was able to launch a business. So I will always be grateful for that. But yes, it's just in terms of, you know, even in promoting the book, and 9 years having passed, it's still the blocks, Carlene Duffy, or the blocks, Michael and Carlene. And actually one of my staff member asked me recently, she said, doesn't that annoy you that you've done so much since then, but you're just always going to be Carlene from the block? And I was just sort of like, I don't know if it does, because I think it's just so nuanced. Like, I will always, that is what it is. And the block is such this mega sort of juggernaut, this mega sort of influence in terms of like mass media, and it's got such a wide audience that it's sort of hard to leave that part out of it. And I will always, TV's never been the thing I've been most proud of. Like, I always get way more excited when I see our work in print. I will always hang my hat on my creative output. That's just always how it will be. But I cannot deny the platform that it was for me.
It's like swings and roundabouts, isn't it? In order to have, you know, you have to take the light and the shade, so that if you know, and I think it's really good, because you're right, it's something that it's probably you're not going to be able to distance yourself from. Like, that's just the vernacular. The Australian people are just going to be like, we remember, they never forget anything. So might as well just own it, lean into it, and sort of think, okay, well, how do I use it to, you know, elevate and show off what Cedar and Suede can do, and how can I use it with my book launch, and how can I use it this way, and look at it from the positive side? Because overall, like, the way that yourself and Michael were portrayed was really good. Like, it wasn't as though there's any bad blood there. There's, you know, there's nothing but benefit.
And we did good work at the time. Like, I had I didn't know what I didn't know back then, which was sort of worked in my favor, I guess, in terms of making decisions. But I look back at what we did and I think, oh, we made really strong decisions and design choices with having very little experience. So I'm not, you know, I did sage colored wardrobes in my very first room. So, and that was in, when were we on? 2014. So I don't like look back, and there's definitely things I would do differently, but at the time, I think we did pretty good work. And I am never trying to distance myself from it. I actually think, if anything, it's more about, I guess, because the interior design industry can be a little bit closed and a little bit, dare I say it, elite. And if anything, I would like to be able to bridge that gap a little bit.
Why do you think that is? Do you have any?
I guess because it's always been a luxury service. I mean, many interior designers loathe the block.
Yeah,
and I guess it can be accused of being a bit over commercialized and repetitive. But you have to remember that they are not interior designers. They're contestants, and some of them who have never designed anything before. So I also think the industry needs to give credit to the block for, I guess, highlighting design and renovation. And we now know, you and I know, like, what people expect of their homes is so, so different and so much more than what's been expected in times gone by. Many more people are now seeking out interior designers that, where it used to be very much a luxury service. It still is a luxury service, but I would say the gap is closing a little bit. It's very, very time consuming, and that's where the cost is for a client or a consumer in paying an interior design service. But I feel like there's just a little bit of a change happening where it's not so elite. There's still interior designers who only operate in a you know, they only operate in a really high-end capacity, but then there's ones that don't. So there's a little bit of a maybe the gap's closing slightly.
I think you're right in terms of the block showcasing what a well-designed house, how it can make you feel and how, like, what are the benefits, because it's one of the only places where you will see a house designed from the front doormat all the way to the back landscaping and actually see what that looks like, unless you have gone down the avenue of working with a designer during the build process yourself. And for so many people at home, they haven't done that yet, or they wouldn't have considered that. You know, people thinking it's repetitive, or with how are they going to pay for the houses if they can't talk about the products that are on there? Like, there's, you know, a lot of back end stuff, obviously. And I think just with the light and shade you spoke about before, you've just got to take that in order to get the result that you want to also binge. You know, you want to be there on reveal night. Throughout the week, you're going to have to see advertisements of major sponsors in order to get that reveal. So I think people, you know, eventually they sort of know one feeds the other, and you have to sort of take it on board and just enjoy the overall process.
And I also think, know what you're watching. Like, the blocks are not really a design show. It's a renovation show. You don't see the back end of, I don't think it shows you much insight into interior design at all, and nor is it aspiring to. I mean, the conversations we have in the studio when we're designing are very involved and complex. And sometimes I think, oh, my God, imagine if someone was recording this. That there's none of that insight on the blog. So it's really not an interior design show. It's truly a renovating show. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have long thought that they should, that one idea that they could roll with is because they have obviously professional builders on site and they have professional people on site to advise the contestants, that they should have an in-house interior designer and really start to look at interior design so that you can see the differences. And then if they did have that, people would start to realize, oh, they are just contestants. This is just renovating. And this is the professional that comes in, that's local, that actually talks at that technical level and talks to the contractors and talks in a way that's like, oh, all right, yeah, they weren't doing that. This is quite a different, and maybe that would pacify those interior designers who don't like the block because they'd start to see a difference. But I'm with you. I think it's actually from a volume strategy. I do have calls with clients all the time that will reference one or two things, especially at the time. Whenever it's on the TV, I find it's more likely someone says, I saw this tile, I'm interested in it. But that is good, because I want people to have language to articulate their style outcomes, and I want people to start to learn a little bit about what they are looking for so that I can deliver a better experience from my end as well.
Yeah.
In terms of cedar and suede, do you think there's anything that you've done differently that's paid off, like big risks or approaches to projects that you might do differently to others?
I think we're very good at using colour in a way that it gives the client design longevity. That's really important to us, not that we're using colours that are of the moment, but in a way that the homeowner won't tire of them, and in a way that they are unique and, yes, will stand the test of time. We sort of pride ourselves on being able to come up with a concept that is true to the origins of the home, its era, its location, and who lives there. We don't have a cut and paste approach. We treat every home we design very uniquely. And some of that's a little bit instinctual. I feel like I can read people quite well in terms of the sort of people they are and the sort of home they want to live with. I like to think the homes reflect our clients' personalities. So I feel like we're also, good at not being repetitive. We are mindful of the fact that we don't want to, I mean, we want to stay inspired ourselves. So we don't want to be repeating colours and materials. We want to be offering each homeowner something fresh and inspired for both our sakes. And I think that's what we do really well.
Yeah, I would agree. And I also see lots of people sending me when they're thinking about communicating their brief, for example, I often see Sia and Spade stuff that's been pinned that they've, you know, they're trying to articulate a particular use of colour and a particular feeling in a room. So well done. That comes through loud and clear to me. Oh, I often get lots of people being like this, but not green, or not blue, but like this. And that says volumes, because that speaks to creating a feeling rather than a trend or a particular, you know, yep, we did green and green's done and that's how everyone has to do green. They're really actually just saying, look at the saturation of color and the hue and the way that this room hits with the lighting, and I really like it. And I think that will stand the test of time for sure. In terms of staying inspired and like pushing yourself, pushing your boundaries in your work, is there any specific sources or practices that fuels your creativity? Like, where are you sort of getting that from?
You would think I would spend more time on Pinterest, but I don't. And we use Pinterest in a way that I guess we, when we're looking at doing something specific, like a specific detail, then we'll use a Pinterest image to be able to communicate that to the client in concept stage.
Yeah.
I would say I look at a very wide range. I follow a wide range of designers on Instagram. So, you know, I love what the English do, which is lots of color and pattern clashing, lots of detail and ornate classical detail in a very more is more sort of way. And I take inspiration from that and would never be able to apply it to most of the homes we do. And I think that's the difference between maybe not just Australia, but also Queensland specifically. But I still get inspiration from that. And it's the same way that I would get inspiration from an American farmhouse but not be able to apply it specifically. So I do draw on very specific details from a very wide range of design aesthetics. I think Australian designers, I think we've got some of the most exciting interior design studios in the world. I love like YSG and Flax Studio, Arrant and Pike. They're always studios whose work I look at for inspiration, even though I feel like they're operating at a higher end. I still think, again, you can pull inspiration from anywhere. I would really like to dedicate more time to books, because I feel like I don't spend enough time with my head in a design book. I see a lot of, you know, we see so much imagery like Instagram especially, but I think it'd be nice to just really get my head in a book.
Yeah, more than I agree.
And really dissect the detail and the why and the how and read the words on the page.
And you buy so many of those design books. So I actually made, you know, I don't really do a whole bunch of New Year's resolutions, but this year I sort of wanted to look into that self-care piece, running a business with a family. And I thought, it's not always possible with a one-year-old to get out to yoga and get over here and run away. And I was like, but it is possible to open one of the 75 design books I've invested all this money into that I absolutely love. And for me, that is an absolute form of self-care. Nobody come near me, and I can put on some music and I can light a candle, do whatever you want. But actually reading them, because I find they are so inspiring. I get so energized after I just read one. And then I think, oh, I wish I did this more often, because it is something that, yeah, it tends to pass you by, and they're styled so beautifully in the studio. But if you never pick them up, like all the magic is actually on the inside.
Yeah. There's also a podcast I've been listening to called, House of Home or Design. It's like Business of Home. And it's a really, it's an American podcaster, but he interviews all different interior design studios, mostly American and English, as well as suppliers. It's a really interesting insight into mainly the American and English interior design industry, but I find it really interesting. So it's not a bad one. He asked them, you know, questions like, you know, like how do they price and what are the challenges with working with clients? What are their concerns around the current economic climate? So yeah, it's a good resource for some back end information.
Podcasts are life. I'm always plugged in doing that, upskilling and cleaning and doing other things.
Me too.
Do you work with international clients? Have you ever looked into the space of working with some of those maximalist, you know, British clients or going over to the US and working in that space?
No. And I think that it's just so saturated that I don't think that's where we would do our best work. Like, I feel like there's some really strong interior designers who are really good at what they do. They've got a really strong aesthetic. Like, that is what they do over there.
Yep.
I feel like we are quite good at understanding what Australians need. We understand our climate and just the way Australians live. And I feel like that's a whole other world I'm not ready to navigate.
And if it's not needed, you know, you don't need to be doing these things. It's just interesting, you know, some do and some don't, and why. And I think you're right though, in terms of, and one of the things that I was doing with the podcast and launching the podcast is wanting to speak to prominent Australian designers, because I think those podcasts and those stories are there with the US and the back end of the US businesses and how was their journey getting there. And that's great. And I absolutely have inhaled all of those podcasts, but I really would like for emerging designers to be able to hear stories as well with people that have done it here in this climate and in this industry and with this exact same challenges, so that it's sort of a little bit more relative.
Yeah, absolutely.
So congratulations on the release of your book, This Old Van. I'm yet to get a copy. I am going to go out and get one because, for obvious reasons, I'm super interested in it and I just haven't been out, and I will use it as one of my self-care dates soon.
Okay, thank you.
To dive in and have a look. But I wondered if you could share a bit about the process of sort of pitching that to a publication, to a publisher, and writing and designing. Like, I know so much goes into, I want this over here, and just the look and feel and pagination. What was all of that like?
It was very time consuming. So the pitching to publishers part was in the hands of my agent. And I think there were three publishers who passed on it before Hardy Grant picked it up. And it was always going to be a hard sell because it's so niche. Some of those publishers had said, we're very interested in an interiors book. Do you want to write one of those? And I do, but not yet. I want to have more designs under my belt before I go down that path. But I just knew that the how to renovate a vintage caravan book needed to happen. And Hardy Grant, because they've got Hardy Grant Explore, they sort of already had their heads around what, you know, this would be. We pitched it as a very good looking how-to book. So it was important to us that it not be so informational, that it was dry, that all that information needed to be in there, but it needed to have the pretty pictures to support it. And it is that, and we're really proud of that. But yes, the writing process is, in some ways, because it is so informational, it's a blessing and a curse. Like, it has to be so technical. So there's, and we have to be able to, I guess, communicate in a way that it's easy for renovators to understand it. Some of that meant diagrams to support what we were saying. It was very complex and very time consuming and very rewarding. It's just so nice to have it out there. Some people said to me, but don't you just have a ghostwriter for this stuff? And I was just like, no, like, even if that was on offer, it wouldn't have benefited us, because how do they communicate all the intricacies of like building and renovating and design? Like, that has to come from us.
And you've done it. You'd have to tell them anyway to tell the reader, right. And you can write. So
exactly. It would be totally redundant. But Michael, especially, his part was very technical, and he was, poor bugger, was renovating, like doing the build of Goldie, our latest fan, and having to meet the publishing deadline. So was that last year? Yeah, it would have been last year. It was a big year. Yeah, it was full on. But yes, we were really excited when Heidi Grant picked it up. The pitch part had to be reworded in a way that it was applicable to an international market. They really wanted it to be able to be sold in America, England, New Zealand, as well as Australia.
They're selling the van lifestyle, so the camper vanning around Australia, you know, selling that lifestyle and come over and check it out and go down the East Coast, yeah.
Yeah, so we had to do a lot of, like, you know, currency conversions, measurement conversions. We spoke a little bit about Airstreams, because American vans are nothing like ours. Like, you know, the Viscounts and the Millards are much smaller comparatively to the big Airstreams. You know, America does everything big. So tenfold, they got big trucks, which they tow their big vans. So, you know, I spoke to a couple of Airstream experts so that we could touch on that. So there was three, what I call, case studies, which one was the Airstream, one was a combi van, and one was a van interior that was more like black and white, monochromatic, because that's not what our vans are. Like, my whole thing is color. There was a few, what I call case studies mixed in with our own vans and picking them apart and talking about the process in relation to our vans. So it was a big year. And I wasn't prepared for how much time would be involved in the editing process, because obviously, you know, our publisher is down south and we're here, so everything was done. So there was a lot of meetings with, like, the editor, so which is more about, like, layout and wording. And then once sort of that deadline had passed, then we moved along and there was lots of meetings with the publisher about who was then liaising with the book designer, who was, you know, I want this image here, I want this specific border, this photo looks a bit dull. It was very, very specific. And I guess because I come from a design background, I was probably a bit more specific and invested than maybe other people would, but I just knew what I wanted, and I guess I know what I like aesthetically. I know what I want to look at, and I know how I want the book to read. So it was a big year. We've had really good feedback, which makes us so happy, of course, if you're going to invest that much time into something.
And when your name's on it, the details matter. And it sounds like the perfect, like, I'm already thinking about it going, yep, that could sit on my coffee table, and my husband would be thrilled because there's practicalities in there that appease his mind of things need to have a reason. They can't just be aesthetic. And then on the flip side, it would absolutely delight me because I can sit and just look at all the pictures and think about, you know, the next, we're not doing another one, but the next caravan renovation.
Yeah. And I actually, it was important to me too there that I speak about my design process in a way that it could be applied to any interior. Like, it doesn't, that's not specific to caravans. So there is a lot of information in there that's useful to just interior enthusiasts in general as well.
Yeah, fantastic. So a lot of people within my community are running interior design businesses whilst also raising kids, myself included. Have you found anything particularly helpful in balancing that design life and mum life, or got any perspective on that for us?
I could not do the sort of work we're doing without my staff. So as I sort of said before, if you can hire fairly early on, even if it means you're not making, you know, taking much of a salary yourself, I would say it's worthwhile just in terms of being able to build and grow and not go crazy with how much is involved. But I would say, yeah, knowing what your strengths are. Mine are not bookkeeping or accounting or documentation. I am strong at client liaising, and I make all the selections myself. And I know what I want in terms of branding. So delegating is really key, or you will go cuckoo, like you just can't do it all.
No.
I would say if you're starting off and you are wanting to build a portfolio, and lots of people already know and do this, but do some jobs for family and friends just to get some, yeah, jobs, some projects under your belt. And maybe that means doing it at a lesser rate because you're green. But to be honest, I still do a lot of jobs for people I know, friends, acquaintances, clients, like past clients and their family members. And you can't go on offering, you know, family and friends rate, because if you've got staff, that's just not an option. If a family member or friend wants to engage you, then they sort of need to pay full rate because you've got a business to sustain.
Yeah. And all they're really doing is the major difference is between a client you don't know and a client that you do. The diary can only fit one client, and it's whoever's willing to pay the totally. Fee, basically. Like, you can't look at it any other way, because the kids are involved. Like, every minute that you're in your design business, you're not with your children, which is fine. Like, that's the choice that we make, and it engages you in so many other ways. But I always look at it like, you know, that's the cost to get me away from my kids doing the thing that I love with a client, and it can't just be like a school mom or a friend, like for no money.
Yeah. And I would also say, on the days you're working, make sure your kids are occupied outside the home, whether that's childcare, because I have my studio, like, it was purpose built in the house. I absolutely love working from home. But there are definitely times still, you know, like, my kids are often dropped home from school. But as soon as I've just got that noise in the background, it's distracting.
Yeah.
So I just make sure, yes, that have your committed work days, and even if your office is at your house, make sure your kids are not.
Yeah.
It's just really the only way to actually focus.
Yeah.
But, yes, delegating is key, because if you don't, it's inevitable that the hours that you're wanting to invest in your kids, you're going to be preoccupied because you're going to be overwhelmed and stressed. So I'd say, yeah, delegating is key.
I think that's a great outlook. I think it's really important. I do the same. My studio is here. It's off-site at the house in the backyard. But I do definitely agree, like, I am a better mother and a better interior designer and better at everything when those days are allocated, so that when I'm working, I'm working. When I'm with the kids, I can be present with the kids. Otherwise, all you do is feel mediocre. You're working with them and you're with them when you should be at work, and you can't actually do anything in a successful way if you haven't scheduled those into separate days. So that's perfect advice.
And it's likely that, you know, if you're in that feel, like, you're in that moment of, like, overwhelm, you won't even know it. Like, I feel like I spent years completely overwhelmed with workload and managing, you know, balancing family life. And I didn't even know, like, I didn't know that I was stressed. So it's, I would try and remove yourself to be able to take a good look at your situation.
Yeah, I think that's so important and a great observation, because the media and everything tells us, you know, we can have it all and that's very normal and everybody's feeling like that. That doesn't mean it has to be normal. Just because, like, so many women report being burned out and overwhelmed and, you know, frazzled beyond your eyelash, you just can't get on with anything. It's like, I don't really think that should be a way of life though.
And yeah, I'm not interested in that.
No, and there's so many other ways that you can do things without having to feel that you are not capable or able because of the mother load, if you will, that is placed on you. So I think, yeah, almost looking at your life and work balance in the same way you look at just your business, and how can those back end processes work better, and how can you almost need to systemize your life with the kids to be able to be like, oh, okay, that could be outsourced. Grandparents can go to pick up twice a week. This could happen, because I think we just think everything has to sit in your to-do basket, when in fact they're, you know, there isn't always a village, but there is generally a team of sorts. You know, there is someone that you can ask, and we just don't ask for enough help, I think. So looking at objectively in on that before it's too late, because as you say, you can be living it for 3, 4, 5 years and then go, how was I operating as a human at that phase and that season of life with the kids? I look back and I have no idea how it just happened, but I don't remember it. So.
Well, you're still in the thick of it. Mine are 14 and 12, so they're more independent.
Different challenges.
Yeah. Well, I'm still very conscious of the fact that, if I'm working, I just don't want them hanging around at home on screens all day. Like, I want them out and about. Yeah. So I still feel like I'm constantly planning, planning for them, even though they're older and more independent.
I think that's a good point, because, left to their own devices, literally to their devices, you would just be like, however many hours you want to work, they will be spaced out, and, unless they've got an activity. Is there anything that you're specifically looking forward to for Cedar and Suede for this year?
We've got some really exciting projects on the go, so I'm very excited to see them come to life, and I love that feeling of having our work photographed, because it feels like the climax, because you get to see what you've been working towards for so long. And these projects are obviously years in the making, like between the design and then the construction. So yes, we've got multiple on the go that I'm excited to see come to fruition this year.
I always think it's so lovely as well. It's a moment that makes you feel like, now you all get what's been in my head for 2 years.
Yeah.
Because of that, we try our best to articulate, and obviously the documentation and all the other things, but you have probably seen it since its inception. You've been walking the rooms, looking at the doorways, the shapes and the colours and exactly how it's going to be. But finally, there's that penny drop moment where everyone else goes, I didn't realize that when you did this, it was going to do that. And you kind of get to finally have that language there for everybody to experience, which is, such a moment, isn't it? It's exciting.
It's really cool. And we are also working on a fabric line at the moment as well, which is, I aim to fill in some holes. We spend a lot of time looking for fabric, and I've always got a vague idea in my head of what I want, and I sometimes have a lot of trouble finding it. So that is in the works as well, which is very exciting. I like the idea that, I might be able to produce something that I will then ultimately see on a piece of furniture or in form of curtaining or a Roman blind. So that will be exciting to see come to fruition.
Super exciting. So like a performance fabric, like an upholstery type of.
We're in the process of creating the print. So it will be able to be basically printed on multiple types of fabric. So curtains, upholstery, cushions, sort of whatever you want.
Amazing. You need to get in there and have meetings with those big caravan houses. Be like, no more.
Yeah, I should actually.
Be like, there's a really organic link here, and I think we need to sit down and chat, because people are very sick of what you're pumping out, the same three colours and the same patterns.
Yeah.
Amazing. And now, how can my audience connect with you if they want to come and check out what you do? Where can we find you?
So we are at the studios at Cedar and Suede or cedarandsuede.com.au. So that's the studio. And then Michael and Carlene is our Instagram handle, but it's a bit more lifestyle-y. That's sort of more about us and less about design. So definitely for a design focus, have a look at the website or our Instagram handle.
Perfect. Thank you. I go down quite the rabbit hole on your Instagram handles as well with Cedar and Suede and looking at all the beautiful finished jobs. All right. Thank you again for your time. It's been so lovely.
Thank you.
And a very surreal moment for me, a full circle. I feel like
it's funny
seeing you choose our little caravan to talking all things caravan and design. So it's been thrilling. I absolutely love that chat with Carlene. I love the behind the scenes look into her own design business and how that has evolved organically after being on reality TV into the powerhouse that is Cedar and Suede now. I love seeing everybody's journey and hearing more from prominent Australian designers as well, as we spoke about in the chat, not just these podcasts full of American journeys, but how you actually do that here within our Australian landscape of design. If you're new to the world of interior design or you just want to level up your design business, don't forget there are heaps of free resources on my website, www.oleanderandfinch.com. Just click on the free resources for interior designers and you can download things like my exact discovery call script and how to ask for the sale and a whole bunch of different things that may be of interest to you. And until next week, I hope that you are off designing your own success.